The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Hi again, everybody. Welcome on in. We join you today from California. I'm out here from my high school basketball coach's funeral, and I'll talk more about that here in a little bit. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support, as always. So you have people in your life. You have people in your life that helped you to become the person that you are today. Those people may have been your parents. Those people may have been your pastor, may have been your coaches, may have been the teacher, whoever it may be. And you have those people that, as life goes by, you think they're always going to be here. And then one day you find out they're not. That high school basketball coach was the person for me. I've talked about this openly, but just for those of you that may be new to the audience, broken home, not a great situation. There were not many people that could keep me on a straight and narrow path, except for the sports people that came into my life. And my basketball coach in high school knew that I had a really tough situation going on at home and gave me keys to the gym and said, don't tell anybody you have the keys to the gym. And one day he showed up in my class and had a bunch of recruiting letters for me and said, you're going to get more of these, keep them. And one day he had a Street & Smith magazine with Magic Johnson on the cover and said, you're in this. You're a Street & Smith honorable mention All-American basketball player. And keep it. And one day you'll want to show your kids. And he was right. And then I got injured. And the career just kind of went that way. And fortunately, broadcast was something that I was being poured into already. But without my basketball coach, without Mike Williams, I'm not sitting here today. That's it. So I'm out here for his service. And it's just one of those parts of life that you go through. None of us get out of here alive. I know to be morbid on this Monday, but it's just why and how I like to give the audience kind of pull the curtain back a little bit on what I'm all about, what we try to get done here. So yesterday I did find my way to find a place to watch the Cardinal game. That's 3 hours of my life that I'll never, ever get back. Fortunately, there were some other games on. I mean, the amount of penalties and the offense was offensive. It looked very much like a first time go around for a roster that had been bottomed out. There were some positives. Certainly you can take away the defense played pretty well in spurts, but again, it's Washington. They're not good. So it was two teams that, fortunately, I had the 49ers in Pittsburgh over here, so I could watch Brock Purdy do his thing and tear up the Steelers. And there were some other games that were on as well. Minnesota-Tampa Bay was somewhat entertaining. But I know for the audience on the Cardinals front, I'm not going to sit here and break it down. If Joshua Dobbs plays like this, he's not going to be the quarterback after the Giants game next week. That's it. Can't have that poor performance at quarterback. You can't. And the Cardinals' offensive line, which in my opinion is the strength of the team, wasn't that strong. There's not a wide receiver that you look at and say, wow, this guy is going to put the fear of God. Hollywood Brown's not going to put the fear of God in people just on his own accord. They don't have enough players. But it's a first game. I'm big on what Monty Austin-Fort's doing. You want to take this side of the street as they're 0-1. They're that much closer to the number one overall pick. And the Texans got drilled yesterday. Every Monday, it's going to be about what happened to the Texans and Cardinals, because this is about 2024 April. Really, it's about 2024 March, I guess, when the NFL calendar starts. That's really what this year is about. And it's trying to find some players and not sit here and say, well, this guy played really well. It's not that I'm looking for negatives. It's the positives are young player gets beat, comes back, gets better, gets better, gets better, gets better, peaks out. Zaven Collins appears to be getting better, appears to be getting better. Can't keep losing first-round picks. So that was my takeaway on the Cardinals game. It's not heavy lifting on this. I just sat there and watched it and was like, yep, this is about what we have here this season. On the college front, Kenny Dillingham made some strange play calls. I was not big on the play calling against Oklahoma State. I was really not big on Oklahoma State, ASU, FS1 just being so cheap that they couldn't even afford to fly announcers over, put them in a car or something from LA. Like, really, you're going to do a game remotely and it's pretty obvious that these guys aren't even there. There's no sideline reporter and all that stuff. I'm going to write on a three-dot thoughts later this week on the future of Sun Devil Stadium. future of Sun Devil Stadium and where we are in professional sports. I'm using professional because what's going on in the Valley and facilities and the idea of continuing to play games every September in conditions and try to turn it into a positive and just not having people dug in to say, you know, maybe we should do something different. Maybe we shouldn't just think it's great to go play in 112 degree heat. And maybe there's some opportunities to do some different things. We're going to write about that in deep dive form later this week, because it's been brought to my attention that maybe there are some options. And I'm just going to leave it at that. I watched a lot of the U of A game. Man, Jaden DeLore was really not good early. And they could have won at Mississippi State. They should have won at Mississippi State. And this week they have UTEP. So both ASU, you know, the Fresno State ASU game Saturday and the UTEP game against Arizona on Saturday are games they should win. They should win. Yeah, I'll be interested to see Mikey Keene, a quarterback for Fresno State, another one that got away, went to Central Florida, transferred to Fresno State. Very good player at Chandler. The National Football Foundation, Valley of the Sun chapter, Scholar Athlete of the Year a couple of years ago. Bright kid, great kid. And he's going to be coming back. So on the college football scene, you'll hear from Wilner here in a little bit. John and I are going to talk about what's going on at Washington State and Oregon State over the weekend. They're going legally now. They've lawyered up against the other schools within the conference. That's interesting. Dion doing what Dion has been able to do. How much more sustainability is there to that? And I'm not big on the Pac-12. Fox and ESPN are both going to take their shows to Boulder next week. It's 3 weeks in a row where they've taken their pregame show, and I get it on one hand. On the other hand, there are other colleges that deserve the attention. And I'm not hating on Dion. Dion's a great story. He is must-see TV. There's no question about it. Is he a one-and-done at Colorado now? That question certainly has to be asked. Should there be NFL franchises that are looking at Deion Sanders? I think there's a lot to get into with John Wilner, and we will do that on the other side. Diamondbacks take 3 of 4 from the Cubs. They are sitting right there with a couple weeks to go in the season. I know when we get into football that people take their eye off the baseball team because usually they're done by July 1st. Not this time. They play the Mets today, and I'm totally into what's going on with them. It's become appointment viewing day in and day out to check out what's gone on with them. And that's some of what is on my mind in the world of sports. John Wilner is next. Stay with us. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. He joins us every week to chop it up, as we like to say, across the college football scene. Okay, let's go with the legal stuff first. And the police blotter maybe a little bit too, we'll find out in the case of Michigan State. But let's just start with what has happened in Washington State and Oregon State's case that they, John, are now lawyering up. Are you surprised by this development? Why don't you fill the fans in on it?
I am not surprised. Basically, what has happened is Washington State and Oregon State are taking the Pac-12 to court. They are concerned that the other 10 schools that are leaving will form a voting bloc that will determine the future of the conference that best serves the 10 outgoing members and puts Oregon State and Washington State in a bad spot. In other words, dissolve the conference. Mm-hmm. 10 schools vote to dissolve the conference. Oregon State and Washington State would be stuck if the Pac-2 is able to remain intact. They could potentially have access to all the assets. That's tens of millions of dollars in assets from which they could use to rebuild the Pac-12. So it is not surprising it got to this point. My guess is there'll be some kind of settlement. I don't think either side, even though it's all the same, they're all under one umbrella, but there are now two sides. It's like a family warfare, you know, that nobody wants it to get to litigation and all the emails and the text messages and all that stuff to come to light in discovery. So I would bet there's some kind of settlement.
There has to be animosity from Oregon State and Washington State about all this. I mean, that's just human nature, I would think. Or am I wrong on that, that everybody's looking around at this from the leadership perspective, the chancellors, that they're saying, yeah, this happened. We're sorry. We'll figure something out. Is it really that contentious, John?
You know, I don't know what the exact discussions have been between the presidents of the various schools. Mm-hmm. I do know that there is no trust or faith, confidence in Commissioner George Kliakoff, right? I mean, the 10 outgoing schools, you know, they clearly had no faith. And the two remaining schools are very frustrated with his lack of leadership. So in that regard, there's nobody, you know, holding the conference together as a middleman, so to speak. But I don't know exactly, like, how much animosity is there between Washington State and Washington and Oregon State and Oregon at the very top level? I know there's frustration, but are they, you know, having to, private conversations that are, you know, very nasty? That I don't know.
The damages financially, I don't think, can be measured to the communities in Corvallis, Oregon, or Pullman, Washington over this move. And I think that's gotten lost in this discussion. I mean, when you have a USC fan base that flies on in for a weekend in Corvallis with all the wineries and all the business and all the tourism, or going to Pullman or flying to Spokane, the financial damage, forget about football for a minute, just the financial damage alone, John, for these two communities, if you could address that.
Well, certainly. I mean, look at Washington State, right? They, you know, they get Washington coming to town every other year. They get Oregon coming to town every other year. They get the LA schools coming to town, you know, every other year. Absolutely. The huge damage to the, you know, the pride and the finances of the communities, the ticket sales, the fundraising, all those things are getting undermined in addition to just the depleted competition on the field, right? I mean, Washington State's a much harder sell on season tickets if you're trying to sell Boise State and Fresno State rather than Oregon and Washington. So clearly, huge amount of damage. There's no question about that. Even if they rebuild, it's not going to be the same. But if they have access to tens of millions of dollars in assets from the emergency reserve fund, from the NCAA tournament units that have been accrued, that will help mitigate the damage, at least initially, and help the schools maintain their level of play on the field. That would be huge. And again, we've talked about it before. Once the new playoff system starts, you know, those Oregon State, Washington State, if they can invest in their football programs, they're going to have a great chance to get to the playoff as a Mountain West champion or as a reconfigured Pac-12 champion, mm-hmm. and that would help for sure.
Yeah, and even this season, you know, Washington State and Oregon State are both off to very good starts. Both teams are probably going to be 3-0 after this week. I'm no disrespect to San Diego State, but I think Oregon State is just showing they've been a world beater at this point. And so what a story to say to the conference, like, you know what, we hung in there. We stuck around. Our programs are not damaged. We actually went to really good bowl games in 2023. Come over here. I think, John, walking away from the Pac-12 name to go into the Mountain West is an absolute failure and a poor decision if that were to happen.
No, I do too, and I think that they would prefer to be able to keep the Pac-12 banner. If you have the Pac-12 banner, you have the history. You've got Jackie Robinson, and you've got USC football. That history stays intact. I think they want to do it if they can make it work legally and financially, and that's part of the reason that they've gone to court. So there's no doubt about it. They're going to both be 3-0. Right now, the Pac-2 is 4-0. They're both ranked. I mean, Oregon State, they got a chance to win the conference. They're really good, right? It's a fascinating subplot to this. It's so Pac-12, isn't it? Yeah. That you've got this catastrophic failure in leadership that leads to the demise of the conference. 108-year conference goes kaboom. And yet the last year is this incredible year on the field with these incredible subplots. It is classic Pac-12. The dichotomy between on the field and off the field, between smart coaching and bad leadership. I mean, it is rich, man. It's like Macbeth.
You have a Heisman Trophy returning winner. You have probably four or five quarterbacks that are going to be taken in the first few rounds. And all everybody is saying is, man, that conference is so screwed up. And they're blowing up on every corner.
You can't write it. This is not a Hollywood script at all. It is It's Pac-12. It is the Pac-12.
Okay, so a few weeks in, let's get to on the field. A few weeks in, I'll get over to Colorado in a minute. The fact that Fox is going back there and ESPN is following them and leaving Penn State high and dry, I think all that stuff's funny. But you look at it a few weeks into the season, John, the best chance of the, because there's so many schools that are in the undefeated space in the Pac-12, the best chance to be in the CFP, and could we have, John, follow me here, could we have more than one school in the CFP? It's supposed to be the SEC every year that gets more than one school. Well, I mean, we're sitting here at almost a quarter pole, and there's a lot of options, John, for CFP.
There are a lot of options. Getting more than one will be tough, right? Because you, again, the precedent is you got to be 13-0 or 12-1.
Mm-hmm.
Could the Pac-12 get through this where the conference champ, the only way that can happen is if there's an undefeated team playing a one-loss team in the conference championship and the one-loss team wins,
yep,
right? Which means somebody would have to get through undefeated the regular season, which hasn't happened in the Pac-12 era. The last team to do it was Oregon before conference expansion. I don't think that can happen, but certainly Washington, I mean, to me, Washington and USC have the best chance. Oregon State certainly think they got a shot. Colorado probably does too. But there's going to be, you know, a significant amount of eating your own that takes place starting next week. September 23rd is when conference play really heats up. So I don't see it, but certainly there's a scenario in which it's November 1st and the playoff committee's rankings start coming out every Tuesday, and the Pac-12's got two or three teams in the top eight, mm-hmm, that have a path to get to the playoff, depending on how they do in November. And there have been many years where we've gotten November 1st, and the Pac-12 hasn't had anybody in contention for the playoff. This year, there could be two or three. It really gets back to this incredible dichotomy between the off the field and the on the field.
Yeah, I mean, Utah's got to be in that mix, too. And we don't know about Cam Rising. Utah already has quality victory. I mean, you look at how the Utes, yep, have gotten off the to their start.
And the big thing, too, is in that with the, you know, if we're talking about the playoff backdrop, the Pac-12 hasn't had any bad losses. There have been no losses to the FCS. There have been no losses to the Group of Five, right? The losses are to Oklahoma State, Auburn, and Mississippi State. So, and then if you look to this week, Washington is the only team that's got a real challenge. They play at Michigan State. Everybody else is playing games they should win. Pac-12 could get through the non-conference season without a single bad loss, and that will help the resumes of the teams that are competing for the playoff bids.
John Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline, for a few minutes. You can follow him at Wilner Hotline on Twitter. Of course, his content shows up on sports360az.com and right here on the television show week in and week out. You mentioned Michigan State. Mel Tucker out. Where we are sitting right now early on, and I bring this up from Pac-12 perspective, so Texas A&M looks like a job that may come open. Michigan State is now doing an interim. Florida, Billy Napier is already under a lot of heat. If LSU suffers another embarrassment, I don't know. So I think, John, we're at a point where you have two coaches, in particular the coach at Oregon State, who's really good. And if this situation plays out the way that's going to, they're going to come after him for a job. John Smith's going to be in demand. He's been in demand. Kalen DeBoer lost his athletic director at Washington. He's going to be in demand. I guess what I'm wondering from you is, can you start to already peel it back and say there's going to be some Pac-12 coaches in demand, some jobs that will come open nationally, the trickle-down effect from Michigan State?
Well, certainly. And the interesting thing is the Michigan State thing started in the Pac-12, right? Because they hired Mel Tucker. They bought Mel Tucker out of Colorado.
Yep.
But yeah, the more success you have, the more in demand your coaches are. And the Pac-12 schools are not necessarily in great position to match salary offers from the schools in the SEC and Big Ten. So, you know, what would Oregon State do if Jonathan Smith has Big Ten SEC offers? It'd be tough. They'd have to rely on loyalty. It's his alma mater. I don't know how well that would go over. I mean, Washington fans are already worried that Lincoln Riley's going to leave USC and USC's going to hire Kalen DeBoer,
yep,
because,
yep,
Jen Cohen, who hired DeBoer at Washington, is now at USC. I mean, Dion's going to be in huge demand. What I mean, would the Arizona Cardinals hire Deion? You know, you got to think about the NFL. When you're talking about Deion, it's not just about the SEC. It could also be about the NFL, right? It could be a fascinating offseason on the coaching carousel, and that's only because the Pac-12 has made smart hires. Jonathan Smith, brilliant hire. Dalen DeBoer, brilliant hire. Deion, brilliant hire. And you make brilliant hires, and then you got to keep them.
What is Deion in your mind a one and done potentially because he's had so much success? Like, it's just going to be impossible for him to say no to all this after just one season in Colorado.
Oh, absolutely. But I think Colorado has known that. I mean, they did not hire Deion thinking he's going to be our coach for 10 or 15 years, right? He's going to be a lifer here. They knew. Now, did they expect that after 1 year he would be, you know, potentially so in demand that he would leave? Probably not. But certainly that's the case. Look, Deion is from Florida. He grew up in the Southeast, went to college at Florida State, played in Dallas. He's got, I believe he's got a home in Dallas. He played for the Cowboys, right? He has got bigger dreams than being the Colorado head coach. He took that job as a stepping stone into the Power Five to show what he could do. I think I have to think everybody's going to be watching that. Can Colorado pay him what he's going to want? I don't know, but Deion also doesn't need the money. Deion wants the platform. He wants to prove himself as a coach at the highest level. So certainly all the SEC schools who have passed on him, there are plenty of schools could have hired him when he was at Jackson State, and they passed. Colorado took it, but somebody's going to swoop in, and I cannot discount the possibility that NFL teams are going to be intrigued by him.
No, I mean, Deion with Jerry Jones, if Dallas the other night, the way it went with the Cowboys the other night, that's not going to happen after week one. Is there disappointment from your view? There is disappointment from my view that the networks would just take the easy way out and show the Deion show every week. 3 weeks in a row now, we're going to have game day or big Saturday sitting there in Boulder. I get it. I don't get it, though. Because there's other schools that could be out there. It's not till 8 p.m. that night that they play Colorado State. And so, John, just the whole view of the big networks again coming to Boulder this weekend.
Well, a big part of that's because the week three lineup of games is bad. It's the worst week of the season, right? Everybody who's playing big-time non-conference games, they basically played them before, or in the case of Washington and Michigan State, right, that's on Peacock. That's not a game that ESPN or Fox would want to send their crew, their shows to. Once we get to the next week, September 23rd, that's conference play. So I would think that a lot of the, you know, game day and the big noon guys at Fox, they're going to be going to Big Ten and SEC and Big 12 games because of conference play. I think this is now, here's another, could they go to Eugene for September 23rd for Colorado at Oregon? Possibly, but I have to think there'll be a lot of pressure from their conferences that with which they partner to go to the games, you know, in the Big 12, Big 10. Maybe we'll see them at the USC-Colorado game at the end of the month if Colorado keeps rolling. But it's mostly – this week it's mostly because it's not a good lineup of games.
Yeah. If Colorado keeps rolling and I'm the broadcast executive, I'll just flip it around. If I am sitting in the big chair at Fox or the big chair at ESPN, it's like, no, we're taking game day to where we're going to get the most eyeballs. So too bad, so sad. We're going to follow this Deion show for as long as we want to follow it. Because look, John, you jump off that train for a few weeks and go do a few games and they're 5-0, they're 6-0, whatever it may be. That's a story you just got to follow from start to finish. Once you get invested in it, the idea of, well, why aren't they following them all the way through from a broadcast end? I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah, I know. I totally get that. I just think they're going to see, you know, there's a lot of eyeballs other places like Texas. I don't know who Texas has the week of September 23rd, but obviously Texas is a scorching hot story now, you know, so maybe they go to Austin. That the conferences are going to lean on them for game day and for big noon, right? And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, that back and forth.
One other thing before I get you out of here, this is your rankings. Where do you have Colorado this week? You're a voter. You publish it in Wilner Hotline. Are you a believer yet in them? Are you believing yet in them?
Well, do I believe that they are, you know, a good team? Yes. Do I believe that they are going to contend for the Pac-12 title in November? Not, I'm not convinced yet. Mm-hmm. I have them 18th or 19th, right in there. And I had them ranked in that spot last week, too, after TCU. To be honest, beating Nebraska at home, that doesn't do a whole lot for me. Nebraska's terrible. They lost to Minnesota 13-10. So I didn't move Colorado up after beating Nebraska, but I already had them in my poll 18th or 19th after the TCU game.
I'll let you go off that. Good stuff as always. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. Find his content at sports360az.com, other outlets. And of course, you can follow him on Twitter at Wilner Hotline. We're back with more after this timeout. Time now for AZ Audibles. Every week we chop it up on the high school platform. Eric Sorensen, sports360az.com, knows all, tells all. Zach Alvira, knows all, tells all, writes all for the Tribune. They join us each and every week. All right, we're at the quarter pole, or coming to it, of the high school football season. So I want to just go here and throw a softball up to you. I'll start with Eric. The player and the team that have surprised you, and Zach will get to you in a minute, but let's just go player first for the both of you. Eric, player that has surprised you or that's got your eyeballs here at the quarter pole of the season.
It's got to be Blake Heffron over at Chandler, guys. I mean, I don't know if you heard, but this offseason, there was a little bit of a quarterback issue, I guess. Dylan Raiola exited Stage North before exiting Stage South again. In steps Blake Heffron, amazing team player, undefeated at quarterback at the freshman and JV level, and he's done nothing to disappoint. And talking to Rick Erickson, all offseason, he was extremely confident that the senior would step up and take the reins. He absolutely has, completing 67% of his throws, 7 touchdowns, only 1 interception. He's got Chandler rolling just like they were supposed to, and he's been unbelievable in the locker room throughout his career as well.
Zach, who do you have?
Man, Eric took my selection, I'm not going to lie, but I'll stay with the CUSD and go with Diesel Taylor, the quarterback at Perry High School. He's come in and just absolutely has taken over that program. He's taken over the offense. He's a true leader in the huddle. He does have Don Tinsley and Colton Coleman next to him, so that does help. But he's been great for the Pumas, and I mean, things look to be paying off in certain terms of the culture change there that Ortiz has tried to install. And Perry's 3-0. They got it done against a good Millennium team, and Diesel Taylor's been the reason for that success.
Coach, the coach, Zach, that has caught your eye, or team, I guess, under that coach that's caught your eye so far.
Man, I know this might be the easy answer, but Colin Thomas at Liberty, just what they've been able to do so far. I mean, it's no surprise that Liberty is very good. We all knew coming in they would be good, but I didn't expect them to be this dominant. They've had a running clock every single week, and that's against opponents like Hamilton, like Sandra Day O'Connor, like Queen Creek, all teams that pretty much compete for an open spot every single year. And Colin Thomas is just a super humble guy. I mean, you ask him, hey, you know, what went right for you guys tonight? And he'll go on and say everything they need to work on. So it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, he's never satisfied, and neither is the Liberty Lions team. And that's a scary team, guys. It's a scary team, and Colin Thomas is definitely up there for Coach of the Year at this point.
Eric?
I'm going to stay in the Southeast Valley, guys, and Steve Campbell's got that thing going again at Williams Field, a team we really didn't talk a lot in the offseason about. The Blackhawks are 3-0. They had a wild comeback win in week 1 over Brophy. Dylan Lee, the Iowa State commit at running back, has been, as advertised, having another great season. But Cam Cook, a wide receiver, is averaging about 90 yards a game. They're physical. They're running the ball. And looking ahead on the schedule, I think it's really interesting. Although the Blackhawks' schedule is tricky, next month they could be 6-0 going up against Zach's alma mater, the Highland Hawks. I just think Williams Field is a team that towards the end, we may be talking a lot more than we are right now.
Eric, I'm going to stick with you. Last week you saw Shap, right?
Yes.
And what did you think of Shap? You know, that's a program that's gone through coaching changes. All the focus in that part of the Valley has been on, in recent years, what goes on at Saguaro, what goes on at Pinnacle. Shap's kind of sort of mentioned, but not what they once were. Where do you think of Shap and where they're at now?
It's funny, Brad. I was talking to their first year head coach, Doug Nissenson, before the game, and he said they have 10 starters that aren't even able to drive a car yet. They are very, very young. Their skill players are exceptional. Obviously, Plas Johnson, the ASU commit, is a two-way stud. That was an unbelievable game at Desert Mountain. Last year, I was at Desert Mountain for their overtime loss against Notre Dame Prep. This year, they get it done in the final seconds against Chaparral. I think the Firebirds are still trying to find their footing a little bit, but the pieces are in place. Maybe not this year, but moving forward for sure.
Zach, over at Mountain View, they have Basha this week. Mountain View's 2-1. Basha coming off a win against Saguaro. Is there any way that Joe Germain gets this figured out now? I think the direction that he's going is positive. Is Basha still trying to find, as Eric said and put it well, their footing?
Yeah, I think Bash is still trying to find the footing a little bit. I mean, obviously the loss to Highland wasn't anything too crazy. I mean, it was still a 1-point game. I think Mountain View is able to keep this game close. They were able to do that against Saguaro, but I do think the Basha Bears are going to come out and win that one. But I do, like I said, Mountain View keeping games like that close. They beat Queen Creek by 20 points or so. They're 2-1 on the year. They're obviously exceeding a little bit of expectations that I even had for the team. But I mean, I'm not really too surprised because Joe Germain is one of those coaches who figures out a way to get things done. I know they have battled some injuries already. I think Jack Germain, his son at quarterback, got hurt again. So hopefully he's going to be healthy. But Mountain View is a scary team. I think if they really start to figure things out, they can surprise some people. I just don't think it's this week against the Basha Bears.
Zach Alvira dropping knowledge. Same with Eric Sorensen, week in and week out on AZ Audibles. Thanks, guys.